Hello, everybody. I can't believe I'm doing this, and you know, this is the kind of thing that's been like a long time in the making. But welcome to the very first episode of the Harrison 101 podcast. You're probably listening to this either on the Harrison 101 website, harrison101.com, or on iTunes. Hopefully, we'll get that sorted out as well. We'll iron out the kinks so we get it all out on there eventually. But on this podcast, we're going to be talking some motorsport. We're going to talk a little bit of Formula One. On occasion, we'll talk some MotoGP. We would have done so for this episode, but unfortunately, both my co-hosts forgot to watch it. Fantastic planning, gentlemen. Maybe next time. But we also have some just general good conversation, some banter, some comedy, all that good stuff. Anything else we like to throw in, because us guys like to go off on one, and we're fairly well knowledgeable. King will probably go on about F1 history, and Kraken will probably go on about some gay anime girls.
Ooh, yes.
But more about that later. Just to quickly introduce myself in case you're a new listener. My name is Andre Harrison. I am a broadcast journalism student from the University of West London in London town, from London, England. You probably already know that already if you're listening to this, but just in case you're not. By day, I'm a broadcast journalism student. By night, I make videos, I write blogs, I do all that whole freelancing thing, which is the really professional and cool way of saying I blog now and again.
I should use that more. Use that more often. Freelance.
Yeah, it's the most professional way of saying you do fuck all, like, ever. Essentially, we're aiming for this show to be about an hour and a half long. We're aiming to take some viewer questions, or listener questions, I should really say. I think I'm on TV for some reason. Some listener questions in future episodes as well. I'd love to have you guys involved as well. And yeah, hopefully you guys will enjoy it. Obviously, this is only the pilot. You know, this is episode one. It's not going to be smooth. It's not going to be, you know, perfect and wonderful and all that. But hopefully it'll work out nicely. Obviously, in my spare time, obviously, I kind of make Formula One and other motorsport-based videos on YouTube. YouTube.com/Harrison101HD for that. And again, in case you're new. Let's introduce my guests real quick for this episode. First of all, we have our American friend. For those guys that know my YouTube channel, you probably know this man very well. He's a freelance, apparently. journalist, kind of video maker. Just generally ridiculously knowledgeable guy on Twitter. It's Ryan King. Say hello, Ryan.
Yep. Hey, guys. Hoping to have a good time tonight.
And unfortunately, we ran out of guests, so we kind of roped in our man Gino from the F1 community as well. Say hi to the listeners, Gino.
Hello.
But also, you have the best nickname ever.
Ah, thank you.
We call it the Kraken. We call him the Kraken around these parts. So we already have episode one of Release the Kraken's episode title already confirmed, which is very convenient. So, you know, I don't have to worry about that creative department later on, which is fantastic. But yeah, hopefully we'll have some fun with this show. So overall stuff when it comes to Formula One in this episode, it's going to be a mainly Formula One based episode on this one again, because only one of us really ended up watching MotoGP, unfortunately. I'm going to have to rope in my Bike Live hosts for that one as well. I'm going to have to get Lewis and Rebecca on here one time for that. But in the meantime, we're going to talk about the F1 2014 video game. I mean, hell of us, two of the three of us regularly make video games, stuff about Formula One and this year's incarnation. And, you know, Formula One 2014 came out, well, a few days ago, or in the case of a few directors, a couple of weeks ago. But hey, we'll make the most of it.
And for me, tomorrow.
Does it not come out until tomorrow in America?
Yeah.
That'd be some shit. Last year, the Americans got it first.
Because the thing is, the traditional like release day for any video game in America is on a Tuesday. So obviously it's going to clash. It's either going to be earlier or later.
Ah, I call this poetic justice for America.
Definitely.
Because last, like 2 years ago, like, F1 2012 came out, and then Athlete got it first, and then he ended up making a ridiculous amount of subscribers out of getting all that early content out, and all us Europeans got pissy about it. But we'll make the most of it, I'm sure. So general reaction, reviews to F1 2014. We'll be talking the Russian Grand Prix in Sochi, the highly thrilling affair, which I only had about three naps in the middle of during the during the season. To be honest, the season's actually been kind of good for on-track stuff. So, you know, this was kind of inevitable. We were kind of due a really boring Grand Prix. Unfortunately, the Russians had to be the candidates to take one for the team on this occasion. who would have thought Russia would do the honourable thing and have a boring race on our behalf?
I know, right? We've been entertaining us all year, but no, the race is crap.
We were so excited for Sochi's Autodrome, and what happens? It shits the bed. Like anything hyping over, like F1 2014 or that really bad girlfriend, you know. We'll also be talking Sebastian Vettel, his move to Ferrari, the possible developments going on at McLaren as well, and knowing the three of us will probably get translated and lost and go into all sorts of other stuff as well over the next hour and a half. So I hope you guys enjoy the show. So let's talk F1 2014. So, and you know, that obviously being a big release for Codemasters and whatnot, this is the fifth console-specific for the, you know, Xbox 360, PS3, and PC for an F1 game. I mean, nobody talks about F1 2009 on the Wii. The less we talk about that, the better, quite frankly.
It's like a bastard child, isn't it? We don't talk about that.
It's the black sheep of the family. We don't talk about him anymore. But it's the fifth Codemasters game we've had, obviously in 5 years. And Gino, I'm guessing the reaction's been, you know, average at best. I think I would say.
Well, the pre-release was freaking terrible. I've never seen, other than the Call of Duty fan page, the official page of Call of Duty. I've never seen so much hate and cynicism for it. I mean, everyone compares it to F1 2013. Some would dare say it's like F1 2012, and there's a lot in the game which makes you think, maybe. I mean, the menu looks the same. I mean, all that stuff. It just feels like the same old, doesn't it, to me?
Yeah, it's never a good sign when you play a game for the first time, you try and get excited about it, and then the menus look exactly the same as last year's game, and it's like, oh.
You can tell they try to make it look different, because instead of being in a garage or being in a facility, they put you on Bahrain, and there's no way to customize that. There's no way to like change it to a different circuit, so that's a bit, what's the point of this?
If they did a round robin for all the tracks on the calendar, that would actually be pretty nice as it goes.
Yeah.
Especially given Singapore is at night, and then you'd have Monaco on the streets, you know, you'd have Sochi's Olympic Park in the background. That could be pretty nice as it goes.
Yeah, I'll give them credit for that, but they don't do it.
It's just turn two at Bahrain.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, given the same thing, like, FIFA does basically the same thing every year, but the thing is that there's just not that much depth as there is in, you know, Formula One compared to as in all of international football.
Exactly.
And the foundation of FIFA's engine is just, generally speaking, a lot stronger than Codemasters for Formula 1. Like, a bad FIFA is still like an 8 out of 10 video game. A bad F1 game is like a 6, and that's being generous. FIFA's fundamentals as the engine and how it works as an overall game is still pretty darn high up the scale. When it comes to sporting franchises in general in game, I think it's about as good as it gets. So,
I wouldn't even call F1 2014 a bad game. I'd just call it a meh game. But for the fifth time in a row, well, not fifth time in a row, but they've made five games, and it's another game which is very average, and that's not really good enough anymore. And My point in my review, which I hope I can get it done by the end of this week, is that if I'm very lazy, but it's like they shouldn't have released it in the first place. I think they should have like tried to mix it up, well, try to put it in the next gen title. But I don't know whether the license they have restricts them from doing that, or they are just using it as a stopgap. They don't tell us. They're very silent and stuff like this. There was someone on Twitter who said, oh, no, you know, Codemasters aren't speaking up. or aren't confronting the criticism. I mean, I saw a comment on a photo, you know, on a status update on their Facebook page, which was deleted because it was a bit critical, and a bit, you know, jabby, you know, so, it just feels like the same, and it got deleted. And it's a bit sad.
I mean, they have the license, they can do whatever they want, and it doesn't seem like anyone else wants the Formula One license. It's a ton of money to just have.
It's an annoying monopoly, but they have a very annoying monopoly because no one else. If the smaller companies want it, they can't afford it. But if the bigger companies, don't want it. It's only co-masters which really have it, and any small company, you know, like a management game, like there was an F1 management game released, like on the PC. I think there was a mobile one too. They don't have the license. Yeah. So,
because the big companies like EA knows Formula One isn't going to sell as well as like an NHL video game or an NBA video game.
I mean, it just hasn't got the overall following for it to be a worthwhile investment.
I think the EA's main, well, EA usually tries and targets America because America's the big market. For FIFA, it's Europe. And they're already focusing on Europe with FIFA, so they don't really need to get the F1 license again. I mean, they've had it before. They can produce something good. I mean, a company that made F1 Challenge, ISI, they do R-Factor now and all that stuff. I think one of my other criticisms with F1 2014, if I remember correctly, they removed the young driver's test. Because instead of getting the young driver's test, you got this driver evaluation thing. And my point was, well, they've cut all this content. Did they at least try and put something else in? You know, like formation laps, something which a PS2 game had. And they didn't. And I'm using that point to say, well, this hit the limit argument is a bit BS. Because maybe graphically they've hit the limit. But they've taken stuff off the disc. They've got more memory freed up now because they're not putting in the young driver's test. Why not try and put something else in, like a formation lap? Just for small things that people have been asking for ages.
You know what's sad? That evaluation test is on the back of the game to help sell the product.
Yeah.
A 2-minute mode is on the back of the game as advertising.
Yeah. I think the young driver's test was a gimmick in the first place. What 10 minutes of gameplay that
people didn't even watch. It was a basic tutorial. Simple.
Yeah,
as
it was
that.
A tutorial. Yeah.
It was a glorified tutorial. Let's not take it for anything else more than that. It was a glorified tutorial.
But they made such a hype out of it. I remember in 2012 they made so much hype out of it, and 10 minutes of gameplay for a game which should last a whole year.
We've gone from 10 minutes to 2 minutes.
It's like they're just cutting the fluff, let's be honest.
Yeah, they're cutting the fluff. It's like, shoot, you know what? There's no point, you know, using David Croft's voiceover for the third straight year. Let's just scrap it and do one lap around Monza. That'll give us a good idea where you're at. I mean, you know what the worst part is? In some cases, you won't even get a suggested difficulty. You'll just get custom. What's that supposed to mean?
It's like, you're so good, you have to race on the highest difficulty with all the assists off, so it's basically custom difficulty.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the highest difficulty doesn't have the AI at the highest level. You have to actually go into the settings and turn the AI up to full. It's like, what's this?
And then there's the talk of the game being fundamentally broken on wheels. Like, that's completely unacceptable.
I've hardly ever used the pad. I'm not good with controllers, and I was instantly doing okay. Instantly. And I'm thinking, that's not right. It shouldn't be so. I know they have to try and support the the average person. Like,
yeah,
they have to try and balance it out.
They're like the 90% of people who buy the game and play.
Yeah, but there should be some sort of option which says controller assist, and you can turn it off because all the people in the leagues who are really good on the pads, they're just going to blow away the people on the wheels. And I feel sorry for them.
There shouldn't be such a disparity between wheel usage and pad usage, especially when they had the balance pretty okay in F1 2013. Like, what have they done to make it go backwards for some reason?
Maybe taking in the new regulations with, you know, the cars being able to generate more wheel spin, they decided, oh, we need to make the game more accessible to most of the people who play the game, so they kind of need to make it easier to drive on a controller where you don't where you can't manipulate the throttle that easily.
I'm guessing so, because, you know, the game brags a lot about its refined handling model.
It doesn't feel refined to me. I mean, I'm pressing down the right trigger going through corners, which are supposed to be low grip. It doesn't feel refined.
And the lap times are still about the same as last year's as well, which is amazing. That's
the most annoying.
Like, fundamentally, the car should be slower by about 5 or 6 seconds.
It's just... Yeah. I'm not asking... It's like, we're not asking for simulation. We're asking for a sense of realism. And we're not getting that.
It's never been that realistic. Like, I saw somebody post a lap time from Suzuka where they beat the all-time lap record at Suzuka from, like, the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Jesus. People are just that good at these games, unfortunately. Like, again, we've seen, like, guys like TRL Limitless do, like, a 147 around Spa in the 2014 cars, which is just ridiculous, quite frankly. But, you know, we're dealing with an arcade game, and, you know, we should always keep that at the front of our minds. Mm. But when you put the F1 name on something, you expect it to be authentic, at least to a degree, and to at least a strong degree. It just feels like that. I think the handling model, I think, is fine on the pad. I haven't got a problem with it. Me being a pad player and whatnot, and an average pad player, like, I kind of represent the voice of the average on this one. So I think the handling model is fine, and it's actually a highlight of the game, to be honest. And the problem is the package that it's surrounded in is almost identical, if not actually slightly worse than last year's. Like, classic content removed from the disc for no good reason.
Oh, yeah, that as well. I just forgot about that. They remove all this content and they add basically nothing. I mean, you can't even... In the setups, you can't even customize, like, a gear ratio. I know in real life your gear ratios are set, but you can't preset them. You can't fiddle about with the ERs. And for an official title, it's a bit... And what wrestles my jimmies the most is that in career mode, you can't even have a personal number. And in MotoGP, you can.
Yeah.
Oh, that got me the most.
That's a
blow. Yeah, I think that's more of a Formula One licensing thing, where it's like you're still technically just in someone else's car.
I know the FOM are incredibly restrictive with this kind of stuff, but they can't be that restrictive. Surely.
Yeah, they are.
They are.
Cut my life into pieces. It's like, this
just
is
buy
ridiculous.
The PC version, we'll mod it to your heart's content. But, it's kind of unfortunate, the whole thing. And I want to ask you, Kraken, like, what did you make of all the YouTube personalities getting the game early?
I don't mind, really. I mean, my issue... At first, you know, when... it was ex-Matty G, I think, who was always, you know, doing those little mocking with a rage quit thing. Mm. And when at first it seemed like he didn't get one of those preview copies, that looked dodgy, but of course he did eventually get it. Mm. But I don't really mind the big YouTubers getting the early preview copies. Well, preview copies in, like, you know, quotation marks.
Yeah.
But... the issue I've always had is if they're being a bit honest, you know, if they're being honest about it, you know, that's all. I don't like people. I know they're not reviewers. I know they don't intend to mislead. I just hope they have an honest opinion about the game. But for the key question, should we get the early copies? Of course, they're the big YouTubers.
Absolutely,
they're the ones that promote the game. So. Give it to them. I mean, it helps them out. It helped Fizzy out, I think. He got a few subs. Tiamat Duck, I don't know how you pronounce it. But he
I just call him Ben, to be honest, because I will never know the correct pronunciation of the dude's name.
But he's got up to 50k now. He's got up to 50k subscribers. Today, you know, good for him. Yeah. I mean, it does help out the YouTubers a lot, and it gives a good representation of the game. It's just, you've got to hope that if the YouTubers do discuss something, like, like some like a part of the game, or do like a review just a bit early, like, you know, like how all those major review sites put out a review a day or two before the game is released, because that's, you know, they're not allowed to do it any earlier. If they do that, you just gotta hope they'll be honest and try and be as least biased as possible.
And that the thing is, I'd like to think people would do that. I'd like to think people are honest. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not criticising this, because ultimately it's a great thing. I mean, the fact that developers are even willing to talk to us is a good thing. I mean, I'm a huge Gran Turismo fan, and that franchise has zero social interaction whatsoever. They don't even have an official Twitter. It's just, you have to dig up the news from PlayStation's accounts and press releases and whatnot, and you're like, they have no interaction with their community whatsoever. None. They just put shit out there, pretty much, and hope it sticks. And that's why GT6 has been largely panned by a lot of people this year. You know, the fact that it was on PS3 was bad enough as it is, quite frankly. And that made a lot of repetitive mistakes from previous franchises' games. But, you know, it's a great thing, and I embrace it. The issue I have is that how people react to it, because I think being in a community with people that make F1 videos is a bit treacherous sometimes, because a lot of people feel like they're entitled to something. And, like, that's always been a concern. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, for instance, you know, people quite rightly, have mentioned how guys like Ryan Littlemore have got one, Ryan L83 got a copy, and he doesn't make videos anymore on YouTube. He's now on Twitch streaming R-Factor and iRacing. So it's like, and, you know, their selection process was a little bit confusing. as I just see a tweet from Tira Limitless saying, do Codemasters actually test their games? Good question.
But I know other people got review copies that don't even, like, post, like, Formula One videos regularly, like Kurt J. Mack. He's a YouTuber that does, like, a co-op series, who always does co-op series for Formula One games, but he's not really a part of the community.
Yeah, Game Right was another one who got a copy but doesn't make motorsport videos anymore, even though he used to. He's now mainstream. He's got nearly 300,000 subscribers now, so he, like, He didn't even go to Codemasters. Apparently Namco got him a copy, basically.
Wow.
Just like, yeah, have a preview code. He got that and got Horizon 2 for free, which still pisses me off. I really want that freaking game. the reaction to it on the whole has been interesting. And, yeah, like, for those guys that haven't seen it, my full review of the game is on YouTube and on my website at Harrison101HD. Yeah, like, you can basically go on there if you want to see my full thoughts on the game. But I essentially said mostly what Gino's already said. It's, the handling model is good, the action is fine, but it's got the same old problems that every Codemasters game has had to date. And that shouldn't be good enough for a game that's been around for 5 incarnations, for 5 in the series. I mean, to be honest, as soon as they announced that F1 2015 was coming out next year for next gen, I was like, well,
they basically admitted it's a stopgap game. They should have just said it. They should have just, like, made a YouTube video and sat down in front of a seat and said, this is just a stopgap game. But buy it. Buy it for us. You know you want to. You love us, really. And then just get up and leave.
Like, one thing I'm just not really comfortable about, it's like, we're not exactly sure exactly when F1 2015 is coming out.
I think they said, like, March time.
It's just early in the season. Apparently, the rumors are from, I got this from Alan Boyston from Team VVV. Apparently, he's quite sure it's going to be May next year.
May,
which would actually be quite a good release date, to be honest. But I was thinking it was going to be more August, September, to be frank. And I was like, shit. Like, how much earlier is it really? Like, a few weeks. But May would be great, but I'm not holding that kind of optimism here, really, to be honest with you. I know a lot of people who tweeted on my review saying that as soon as they heard there was going to be 2 games, like, this year in October and then next year as well, they were thinking, well, how can this small studio develop 2 games in a year? And it just kind of seems like they haven't really. Like 2014's kind of like a placeholder, and you know, a something to tide us over on this current or current generation of consoles until we finish the next gen version, which hopefully is a breath of fresh air to the franchise, because god damn it, it needs to be. You know, the only thing you've heard about it so far is it will feature live updates during the course of the season. So we'll have 17 versions of Vettel's helmet going around as the season goes on, which is, you know, awesome, because, you know, that's a feature. But, yeah. So, moving on from that real quick, because, you know, talking about F1 2014 kind of depresses me at the moment. Let's move on to Sochi.
You move on to something depressing onto something more depressing.
You can tell this is a bright and chirpy episode, can't you?
Yeah.
Woohoo!
First podcast. Let's talk about
depression. Depressive. Oh,
let's talk about an average Formula One game and the second to worst race on the calendar so far. Great. Shit. Okay.
It's just banter. It's pure banter.
It was just banter. It really was. But yeah, let's talk about Russia. Unfortunately, a relatively straightforward victory for Lewis Hamilton. It was kind of a race. It was really probably over before it really got started. By the time we got to turn two, and the moment Rosberg actually locked his tires up, it was like, oh well, that's over then.
Yeah.
Rosberg overcooks his goose. He boxes on lap. On the end of lap one, and it's like, oh, we got the Indian Grand Prix of last year all over again. let's just get rid of these option tires. let's get rid of them all together. And yeah, that was kind of it for the race from a competitive standpoint, which was just unfortunate and disappointing, really. What did you guys make of the track then, and why do you think it was so boring?
I feel like Pirelli were just too conservative with the tires.
I'm inclined to agree with that.
I think it's difficult. I mean, you know, the track is getting a lot of criticism when Tilk actually goes out and says, you know, tries and says something about it. There was an F1 Fanatic article about it, about Tilk defending the track. And I don't even think it's the tires. I just think it's... there's so many 90-degree turns. The only redeeming part of the circuit was that was turn three, going all the way round. That was pretty good. But the only good part about the entire weekend was, you know, oh, the infrastructure's good. Yeah, that's it. It's but Russia. It's the
GP3. The GP3 and GP2 races were good.
Exactly. I was just about to point this out. Especially the GP3 race of Dean Stoneman getting the win.
True.
Was superb, and they were wheel to wheel all the way around that final lap. So I don't.
But the thing is, with GP2 and GP3, the cars are fundamentally the same. So of course, always going to be very close competition.
But then it's not a circuit problem, it's a series problem.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, true. The second DRS zone was completely pointless.
Yeah.
Was there a single DRS pass through the second zone?
If there was, I wasn't watching, I was asleep.
I really don't think there was. I mean, like, Ricardo was glued to the back of Fernando Alonso for the whole second half of the Grand Prix and could not get past him. I don't know whether that was just Fernando Alonso being Fernando Alonso, whether there was just literally no way you could pass somebody around here. I'm not entirely sure which is which, because I know people like to put Fernando Alonso as a god. And, you know, people's like, oh, you know, oh, it's just Alonso being a god. He's an amazing defensive driver. You know, there's no way around him. He's amazing in every way. But, like... there wasn't a lot. Turn two was really the only real passing opportunity. There wasn't even that many passes through there either, unless it was blatantly faster cars making their way up the field like Rosberg did for pitting on lap one, and Felipe Massa, who also did the same thing. He boxed on lap one, and he lost out because he had to run a two-stop strategy, basically, which was completely wrong.
But again, Williams, none of us
knew at the time.
Oh, Williams and their freaking pit strategies.
I've already worked it out. Williams have probably blown at least like 20 points this season purely out of tactical fuck-ups.
Yeah. The pain.
But then again, did anybody really know that Sochi was going to have zero tire degradation whatsoever?
Well, it is a brand new circuit. It was just paved like this year.
That's also a good point.
But the race was boring when, like, journalists who love F1, were sleeping mid-race. You know it's bad when that happens.
Not even Will Buxton can make it sound exciting. And he talks more than anyone. That man could talk for England. But, yeah, some of the situations where... I think the track is partly to blame. The fact it was new didn't help because it didn't open up enough strategy. The problem with it, for me, was just the way the cars are around here. Like I said, the second DRS zone was completely pointless. It didn't do anything at all. That needs to be addressed for next year. And I think having the medium and the hard compound Pirellis... Actually, it was the soft and the medium, my bad. It just didn't work. I think the super soft and the soft would have probably worked out a little bit better as long as the tyres can obviously handle the loads through turns 1 and 3. If they can handle that, then there's no reason why they can't have brought the super softs down for it. But as King quite rightly pointed out, I think they were very conservative on this one. And they've responded because it's going to be super softs and softs in Abu Dhabi in the finale. So, for the first time, they're getting super softs actually at Abu Dhabi for the season finale, which is almost going to guarantee it be a three-stop race now.
Is it like super, super softs? Is it double points? Like, do they get double tyres?
Double tyres. It's going to be a 14-stop race. Like, nobody would have any idea who's in the lead until the final.
That'd be great.
It'd be like Mark Webber. We like the time Mark Webber pitted on the final lap a couple of years ago. It's like, wait, what's he doing in the pits for?
Yeah, but put the super, super soft tyres on. They'll go out, and by, like, the final corner, it'll be down to the carcass, and they have to go into the pit straight away.
No, they'll be so sticky, it literally just won't move off its blocks.
It'd be like, we got so many packages of bubblegum, guys, you wouldn't even believe it.
So Pirelli have clearly listened to what the fans were saying after Sochi, and they've clearly decided to strap some balls onto themselves by actually running the super soft. Why can't they? Are they doing that for America next week?
No, I heard it was just Brazil and Abu Dhabi.
Boo! Like, the circuit of the Americas is almost exactly the same for Abu Dhabi for tire wear. It was a boring one stopper last year.
Yep.
And we're going to have another boring one-stopper next year. Like, oh, this year's like, oh, for God's sake, really? But, yeah, the race wasn't great. Hamilton, you all know Hamilton won. Rosberg was actually onto something by going 51 laps on the prime tyre.
That was amazing.
Honestly, I think if he just didn't try to pass him into the first actual corner of that race, he probably could have won.
The dude was setting fastest laps on the penultimate lap. His tyres were 50 laps old, and he was setting fastest laps. What does that tell you about the tyres around here?
Oh, then again, if you're a hardcore Hamilton fan, you could blame Rosberg for making the race boring, because he did lock up his tyres.
we need Rosberg to race Hamilton wheel to wheel so he can make Hamilton look better.
So I've triggered your Ask FM a question or something. I've just triggered
Don't
him.
Even fucking go where we're on this. All right? If anyone has ever seen my Ask FM page.
Oh, man. I don't know whether to laugh or cry when I read for questions. It's just...
You can't see it, but I'm plucking grey hairs out of my head. And I haven't got much hair to begin with, quite frankly. Being the Jamaican guy that I am, unfortunately. We don't grow hair in a lot of areas. But... Like, seriously, I was asked a question about this today. I was basically essentially told to rank every relevant British driver ever. So essentially, it was. Let me think about it. It was the Hills. It was Button, Hamilton, Clark, Stewart, Mansell, and Surtees. And I put Hamilton pretty much smack dab in the middle of that. I put him fifth. I put Clark at the top, Stewart second, Mansell third, then Graham fourth, Hamilton above Damon, then Button, then James, I'm really overrated, but I'm British, Hunt. But, and then, what was the first three questions like? What was two of the first three questions I get? It was Button ahead of Hunt? LOL! And Hamilton behind Graham Hill, are you serious? And it's like, like, his fan base just reacts to everything that doesn't hail him a direct disciple of Ayrton Senna. Which, if you listen to ITV's coverage around the time of 2007, you'd actually believe he was Senna's cousin. Like Steve Ryder, like, oh god, when he was anchoring ITV F1 back in the day, like, they get me wrong, they had a little bit of a right to be hyped over Hamilton because he was this new, exciting, young British talent.
Yeah,
but they would not stop talking about him. like I remember one time a friend of mine on AskFM actually sent me a question saying at one point Hamilton was mentioned 185 times in a race broadcast.
Yeah, that sounds conservative.
And I was like, my response was, are you sure it's that low? but
I don't know. First half of 2007, he did back it up.
He definitely did.
He was pretty, you know, 2007 to get what? Oh, it was like seven podiums in a row? Something like that?
He was the youngest man to ever lead the world championship that season. And he did so for a good while.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for Kimi Raikkonen turning it up the last four races, he would have been world champion that year. Because Raikkonen won three of the last four to win the title, essentially.
Yeah.
But I've always said Hamilton's best seasons were like 2007 and 2008 by a mile. Like, it's not even close.
It's kind of awkward. Usually you think as your career develops, the seasons get better. But it's rookie years which were the best. And then you just have this middle era of just fourth, fifth. And, you know, a bit of controversy, you know, controversy in the middle. It's just, very odd.
It is very odd. Like, how could you start so great and then end up being average for 6 years?
Oh, 2012, you kind of have an excuse, but because reliability. I can't even say it. I'm so sorry. But it's like the car was just dodgy. It was a very dodgy car. It was quick. You know, someone say it was the quickest car per season, but it was so dodgy. But one race, it could be like, oh, like, you know, proper race-winning contenders. Next race, it'll be meh. Or the other race, it'll just break down. And, you know, fair enough. He has an excuse there. But every other season? Nah, not really.
2012 is the only year I give Hamilton a pass. And that was because he did lose 75 points from race-leading positions that season.
Yeah.
He had the gearbox failure in Singapore. He had the engine failure in Abu Dhabi. And Hülkenberg took him out in Brazil. Hülkenberg mistake there, people. Mark it down. It actually happens once in a while.
I think during that point, it was like, win, retirement, win, retirement, and then another win, I think. I'm not too sure, but it was just like, he either won or retired for like about six races. It was ridiculous.
Or he had Pastor Maldonado torpedo him in Valencia, or had Grosjean turn into him at Spa. But yeah, the cult of Hamilton is most definitely strong out there.
Yes.
Like, I don't think people realise that people thinking Hamilton is the best is like the majority opinion out there. It's not like I'm going out there preaching that everybody thinks Vettel or Alonso is the best. Like, no. You guys are okay. Like, you don't need to worry about me. Like, the consensus is clearly that, you know, we're in the Lewis Hamilton's world and we're just living in it. So it's like, why do you need my approval so bad? Like, it's ridiculous. But I'll say that, you know, to say the least. But, you know, what do you reckon for Austin then? You know, is Hamilton going to walk it to a fifth straight win?
Hamilton has the edge. I mean, he's got so much momentum. But the last time he had a full race winning streak, you know, he lost to Rosberg in a slightly controversial circumstances. Just slightly. Well, by controversial, I mean, oh my God, all the Hamilton fans were in uproar because Rosberg seemed to, you know, pull a Schumacher. But
oh, yeah, Monaco. Oh, yeah, like, the moment where Rosberg made a mistake into Casino Square, and it's like, oh well, he must have done that on purpose.
More stuff. Yeah, like,
I mean, the evidence is yeah, he's guilty. He's a cheat.
Yeah, who needs evidence? He's German. No, he's not German. He's Monaco. No, he's not Monacan. He's Finnish. He's everything.
He's from five different countries. That can't be legal.
And he looks like a woman sometimes. You gotta blame him.
He's not that innocent.
He's toxic.
That episode one, and I'm singing Britney Spears, everybody. I think we're on to a winner with this show.
Yes, sir.
let's talk to our resident Nico Rosberg fan, Mr. Ryan King, about this. Going into a...
I feel like... in Austin, it's not whether Lewis beats Nico or not, it's whether Nico beats himself or not.
You that confident Nico's winning in America?
No, unless he messes it up himself.
This is a good point. Because that's the thing, I think the second half of the season, Nico Rosberg has looked a lot more vulnerable, I would say.
I think
he made very many mistakes in the first half of the season.
It was the Spa incident that rattled him, because the amount of boos he got for about 2-3 races, I think that rattled him. It's made him a lot more cautious. It makes him think twice about doing anything, even though... yeah.
Let's put it to you this way. Blaming the Brits is not going to help. Which is what essentially he did at Belgium. He was like, oh, well, it's all the British guys that have come over, you know, they love Lewis, so it's like, oh, they're yeah. taking it out on me. And then Rosberg pulls out his violin and starts playing a sad tune. Like, woe is me. it's like, dude, you just made 18 points on Hamilton in that one Grand Prix. Chin up, you know?
Because if you chinned up, everyone would be on him even more. Like, oh, you did it on purpose. It's like... you can't just go on the podium and smile because it looks like you did it on purpose.
Looks like Nico's PR officer must have told him, look sad.
Yeah.
look remorseful. Make it look like it was an accident.
You killed a puppy out there. You killed a puppy out there. Yeah, be sad.
Someone's boned your dog. Go. And then he's got a little tear in his eye going out.
You killed Roscoe. Just be very sad about it.
You've turned Roscoe into dog meat, okay? Like, you'd think Hamilton would have the worst reaction if that actually happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, the Spa incident didn't help. He had the two lockups at Monza.
The conspiratorial lockup.
Oh God,
that was amazing! Oh my God,
it's like the guys who all think Hamilton is better than Rosberg are now suddenly saying, "Oh well, Rosberg did it on purpose, didn't he, to make Hamilton look better? Can't beat him on track." Like,
it's funny because suddenly all the Rosberg fans have gone a bit edgy. Like, oh, we couldn't have locked up on by accident. But you remember that comment I sent to you on Twitter?
Some guy
saying, "Oh, Mercedes must be paying him to do that." I was like, "Oh my God, please stop this! You're supposed to be better."
They've told him to lock up to let Hamilton through and get the win as revenge for Belgium.
Do they honestly think that Rosberg wouldn't have said something if Mercedes even dared to like do that for a second time? I'm kind of like the Monza thing.
Maybe Ross, like, the thing is, Rosberg is much better at playing the PR game than Lewis Hamilton is.
Yeah,
by not trying to.
Exactly. By default, that is already better. It's better than Hamilton, who just puts his foot in his mouth half the time.
The Monza thing.
I'm gonna handle this like Ayrton Senna would. So basically you're gonna be a cock, but essentially. Yeah.
The Monza incident, I can kind of understand, because, you know, Mercedes said, oh, they have been punished internally. I can kind of understand why people would say, oh, that's, he did it on purpose. But even then, he dropped off so much during that race, after that incident. And even when Hamilton, you know, Hamilton was catching up to him. It was an inevitability.
He had just gotten in DRS range when Rosberg had the second lockup.
Yeah. It tires me out, this whole Hamilton Rosberg thing. Oh,
yeah, cold. Like I'm mentally exhausted from all this. Watching Sky F1 half the time doesn't help, because Sky F1 are so desperately trying to spin this season, because they haven't had that's their only major story now, besides obviously Sebastian Vettel leaving Red Bull, which not even that was talked about that much during the Japanese Grand Prix weekend.
No.
People were still talking about Hamilton v Rosberg, and, you know, has Hamilton rattled Rosberg, and, oh, can Rosberg come back after you know, out-qualifying him again in Japan? And it's like, oh, for God's sake, really? Like, let's spend 15 minutes analysing, like, Hamilton's lap as to why he was slower. And it's like, make it stop. The only nice thing I've watched with Sky F1's coverage lately was when they actually spent 15 minutes with Sebastian Vettel, which I thought was actually really good. I don't know if anyone's seen this segment, but it was during Singapore, and it was basically like a 16, 17-minute interview with Martin Brundle and Sebastian Vettel on the Skypad, and they were breaking down some of the corners of Singapore. They were breaking down Silverstone and his incident with Fernando Alonso and his fight he had with him there, and talking about the rumours, and it was a really, really good interview, and I think that's partly down to just to Seb being a good dude and whatnot. But it just made for a nice, refreshing change from hearing about Rosberg, hearing about Hamilton, what his dog's favourite colour is, and, you know, all those other really relevant details.
Championship altering details. We're really delving into the psyche of the championship contenders.
It reminds me of, I mentioned this on Twitter before. It reminded me of last year, like at the halfway point of the season on the BBC, when Hamilton had got his first Mercedes win in Hungary, and the hype videos for Spa was literally Sebastian Vettel leads the championship, but Lewis Hamilton has been unleashed. It's like. I was pissing myself laughing when I heard this. It was like, oh my god, he's won one race. He's got to be title contender now.
Gosh,
little did we know Vettel would win the next 9 races.
Damn.
But, speaking of Sebastian, let's talk Seb. And.
Well, that's like, it has to be done. You are Andre Harrison. Oh,
bastard.
Hey, we could talk about gay anime girls if you want. I mean, I don't mind.
Gino, shut up. I will choke you to death with a pregnancy test. Right. in the meantime, it is a newsworthy topic. I mean, it still hasn't officially been announced yet. We're still kind of waiting for the inevitable here. Mm. But Sebastian Vettel is most likely driving for Ferrari next year. Christian Horner's already said it. Gerhard Berger's already said it. It's pretty much a known entity at this point that Seb is going to Ferrari. And Kraken, what do you make of this?
I think this is exactly what Vettel needs, because as we all know, his championships are the most contentious. Questionable championships that anyone's ever had. And if he goes to Ferrari and does a very good job there, I'm sure it will validate. Well, it doesn't need validation, but it would validate all the people who are skeptical. But yeah.
Because the idea of winning the championship in the best car is apparently skeptical now in 2014.
Yeah. I mean, it always has been.
It's like rule number one of F1: the best car wins.
Yes.
Okay. And people will always complain about it. 94, 95. Yeah, Michael Schumacher's Benetton has traction control, guys.
It doesn't count. Mansell's the real champ. Was that what F1 fans were like 25 years ago? Like,
oh yeah, it's before the age of Twitter.
Imagine if it was Mansell in Hamilton's position.
Oh no.
Like, Mansell's the real champion. He did it in the second best car. And as Michael Schumacher romps to victory in his traction control powered Benetton. We don't like this German guy. He's not very fun. He's not on MySpace. We don't like him. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, Vettel being a four-time champion automatically puts him in the top 10 of all time, quite frankly. And in my humble opinion, I mean, King, we wouldn't mention your controversial statement from a couple of days ago.
Oh dear.
I know I'm burying you with a shovel here, but make the
I said I'd put Vettel top 5, maybe even third.
I'm guessing.
How have you not been put on a witch hunt yet?
Like, you may not see it right now, but there is like 50 people outside King's house with burning pitchforks right now, all in Mercedes gear and in every single Hamilton-related cap he's had released this season.
It's like Occupy King's house.
Occupy King. Until he admits Hamilton is better, we're going to stay outside his house. We're going to burn an inch of his garden every week until he gives us an answer.
Oh, dear.
We're going to call this Kinggate. and just send hate for no good reason at all. Like, F1 journalism is corrupt at every level.
I kind of don't want to say it, but I don't even think I would have Hamilton like in the top 10.
No, you killed yourself. You killed yourself.
Die, King. Die now. This can't be a thing. No, I definitely don't have Hamilton top 10. I don't even have him top 2 in the modern bunch, quite frankly. How on earth would I put him top 10?
Brace yourself. You ask, a fan's going to explode again.
Bring it on! Right now, I'm only fueled by hate. I feed off it.
Hamel hate.
Yeah, it's like, I don't even mention I'm going to ask FM anymore, because it's basically all the questions I got. Hamilton or Alonso? Why don't you like Hamilton?
Even have question marks at the end. It's just Hamilton. Hamilton. Hamilton's the best. What are you on about?
For all intents and purposes, is Vettel the pound for pound number one in this sport right now?
I would debate that. It's a toss between Vettel and Alonso, because Alonso's just... It's something about Alonso that's keeping him...
I need to see him where he is next year, see how well he performs. Maybe I'll come back and argue Vettel.
Yeah, it's certainly an intriguing one, because... I said it on Ask FM a couple of days ago as well, that Hamilton is in a tier of his own beneath Vettel, between Vettel and Alonso. Vettel and Alonso are 1A and 1B, quite frankly. It depends on what you value more. Whether you value straight up success a little bit more, as opposed to being the fighter. Like, cause that's what Alonso is. Alonso is the scrapper. He'll scrap for every point available. He is... I think he's had something like 12 top 6 finishes this season in a car which right now on paper might be 4th best.
Yeah. And he also puts the ME in team.
Yeah. What team? He's carrying that frigging thing right now, because Raikkonen is doing fuck all. He is the team at this point. Because what on earth? Like, seriously, what on earth has Raikkonen done this year in comparison?
Raikkonen. There's no words, really. It's just all the hype. Again, another situation where there's all this hype and nothing happens. But then again, the car is partly to blame, but... Meh.
Yep, exactly. It seems to be one of those things where... It's like... Nando is the sexy pick, because he's done 5 years in the most prestigious team in Formula One. He's going to have fans automatically because he drives a Ferrari, because so many people just love Ferrari, and you can see why. And then you've got Sebastian, the boring, isn't on Twitter German who keeps himself to himself for most of the time. And the funny thing is, I know people are starting to come around on Seb this year, maybe because he's not at the top. I think it's just part of our British culture where it's like, we hate winners. We hate winners who aren't British. Like, unless you're Roger Federer, and yeah, like, if you're not British and winning, you're not getting likes.
Yeah, I think I'm just gonna put out this quote from Stirling Moss. It's like, I'd rather lose in a British car than win in a foreign one.
Exactly, because at least the public will love you unconditionally. Even if Stirling Moss is a blatant homophobe. Well, not homophobe, but he was blatantly sexist about women in F1. It's like, oh, it's Stirling Moss, it's okay. He's old, he doesn't get it.
Oh, dear.
But, you know, it's one of those kind of situations. But,
Oh, Dre, good news. Fellaini's just scored for Man United.
I've noticed. Like, everyone was panning Fellaini to come in on at half-time, and it's like, oh, he's actually scored 2 minutes in. Take that, Afro man! But, yeah, like... So, how do you think Vettel will fare at Ferrari, then?
I don't know. I don't have a clue. Because it's... I think Vettel will do the same thing Alonso has been doing all this time. Just pushing to the limit. Trying to get the car to somewhere where it isn't. And I guarantee you that the car will still be probably fourth fastest. I think it will still be fourth fastest. I think Ferrari have lost it almost. It's like, it's kind of like McLaren, but the thing is with Ferrari, I mean, McLaren's just lost it completely almost. I mean, they're fighting for fifth against Force India. At least Ferrari are still kind of somewhere. But I think Ferrari will just still be in that kind of somewhere position for at least another year. And I think Vettel will probably be one of the instruments to try and get Ferrari into, third, second fastest. I think that'll be the case.
No, yeah. You don't think Marchionne is just going to whip Ferrari up in the shape?
He's so non-existent. I don't, you know, I don't think so.
Oh, sir. Sergio's there when you least expect it.
Sergio, surprise! Here's the thing. I think Fernando gets a bit of a pass for being a bit of an alienating personality in F1 when it comes to team building. Like, Nando has had teams bend over and kiss his feet, like, almost every year in Formula 1 since he joined Renault the first time in 2003. The only time that didn't happen was at McLaren in 2007, and we all know how well that turned out.
Oh, yeah.
Alonso had a bitch fit, he walked out of the team, and he didn't win the world title. It couldn't have been any worse for Nando, because he was shown up by a rookie. Mm. Sounds familiar. Yeah.
Wait, you're giving ground to the Hamilton fans, you better back off.
Oh, God. But I think Seb is a really good team player, and I think part of the reason why he's had the success at Red Bull over the years has been because he's able to develop a team around him. He's able to develop a car really well. He's got that Niki Lauda sense of being able to give really good feedback, and that's often what the team have thought was so valuable about him. He's always been able to give great feedback, and I think that's part of the reason why he's not been as strong this year, is because they had to basically have to throw out 4 years of winning data with Sebastian Vettel right out of the window. It's like, don't need this anymore. Put it in the recycle bin.
And somewhere you just see a teardrop go down Sebastian Vettel's
eye. No!
All that work!
Yeah, it's one of those things, exactly. But I think he'll be able to build the team well. Sergio Marchionne is a bit of a thunderous force already in Ferrari, so he's basically come in and walked in and said, I'm taking no bullshit here. Like,
did you hear what Sergio did to Viper?
Tell Greckin this story. It's hilarious.
Well, this year is the 60th anniversary of Ferrari in North America, specifically the United States, Ferrari's largest market. And this is also the first season of the United Sports Car Championship. So in the GT Le Mans class of the Sports Car Championship, it was basically a battle between Viper, which is also owned by Fiat, and Ferrari. Viper ended up winning the championship, both the teams and the drivers' championship. And then a few weeks later, Sergio shut down the Viper program.
Wow. Okay. Okay. I take back my non-existent comment. I take it all back. Jeez.
Yep. Like, our new nickname for him is Sergio Takes No Shit, Marquis Owen.
That's amazing.
Because,
that's amazing.
Like, holy crap.
This just got real.
Yeah. Like, he's walked in, shut the Viper program down, and basically said to everybody at Ferrari, none of your jobs are safe. There is no one expendable at Ferrari.
You can win championships, you can get fired.
Exactly, and he wasn't going to take any of Fernando Alonso's political nonsense, because his two biggest supporters, Stefano Domenicali and Luca de Montezemolo, are now gone. So, like, that's another kind of inevitable thing we're getting to. It's looking like Fernando is gone, and it's looking like he's going to Honda. Should that be McLaren Honda now? That's going to be a really confusing and annoying name to say next year, I can tell already.
Mm. Or that'll be a familiar name to a few.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, like, well, it's not, I guess it's not that unfamiliar, I suppose. It's just annoying. Like, oh, what? Yeah. Yeah, let's go to Vodafone McLaren Honda. I was like, oh, for God's sake. It just sounds terrible.
Oh, do Vodafone make a sudden reappearance next year?
Oh, dear.
Okay, maybe not, actually. I'm kind of out of date on that already, aren't I? Yeah. Very 2012 of me.
You're getting old, Dre. You're getting old.
Shut up. I already am. I'm 22. I'm the grandfather of this freaking community.
Pensioner.
Where's my Weathers original? I need the hot nurse to give me a sponge bath. Sergio is going to walk in there. He's already done over the engine department from what King told me. They've rehauled the engine department. They're going to have to build a few jars turbo on the side of that car for next year, because apparently their turbo is terrible.
It's not even like a turbo, it's just an erbo. It's just, it tries to be a turbo, but it just can't. It just can't.
It's like, oh, I thought we could just put a desk fan in the car and we'd just fly.
Yeah, it's a hairdryer, essentially. Somebody trapped their hairdryer in the middle of the chassis and it counts as their turbo, apparently, because all of a sudden, Ferrari have now the worst engines in the field.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, if the department gets overhauled, because apparently the chassis and the aero in the car is actually quite good this year at Ferrari, so, you know, if they can sort the engine out, then maybe they'll be onto something. But in the meantime, as the driver market seems to heat up a little bit now around this time of year, it's as we mentioned before, it's looking like Vettel will be replacing his arch nemesis Fernando Alonso. As he is heading to McLaren Honda next year, in what's apparently a whopping big deal, apparently something like $30 million a year by the sounds of it. As Honda seems to have bought Alonso out of his current Ferrari deal, which doesn't expire until the end of 2016. So Honda have basically flipped the bill to have Fernando Alonso in there. So what do you make of McLaren going after Nando? Is it an all-in move for the short term?
I think it's kind of like an injection, like they're trying to inject something into that team, because if this doesn't work, if the Honda thing doesn't work, if the Alonso thing doesn't work, I can honestly see McLaren doing a Williams. I can remember in 2004 that both McLaren and Williams had terrible seasons, and McLaren was the only team. Well, McLaren managed to recover from that, and Williams didn't recover for about until now, to be honest. Mm. So, you know, maybe McLaren's having that downturn now. But as I said, if this doesn't work, I can honestly see McLaren doing a Williams for the next few years, because it's just such a downturn in performance. I mean, they went from being at least the second quickest car in 2012 to being not even getting a podium in 2013, and in 2014 it started so well, you know, it's like, oh my god, they're back. Yeah, good on them. And then they're fighting Force India.
Yeah, it's been a shocking downturn for McLaren in the last 2 years. I mean, as Gino quite rightly mentioned, I mean, shit, they were arguably the fastest car in the field in 2012. Just their reliability held them back from mounting a serious challenge. Yeah. But last year they were the definition of a mid-card team. And then they made this big deal they lost Hamilton. That was a blow in itself. Mm-hmm. Which was probably for the best, all things considered. They lost Hamilton. They fundamentally just changed the design of their car and their suspension unit. It cost Martin Whitmarsh his job, essentially, in the end of the 2013 season, after 26 years at the McLaren team. So Ron Dennis decided to not fire, but de-employerize him, because Ron Dennis likes fancy lingo. And they changed the car around. Sergio Perez did not work for some reason, even though I don't know what standard they were holding Sergio Perez to at all. It's like, what were you expecting out of Sergio? Like, really? Do you think he was going to beat Button out of the box like that?
No.
I never understood that one.
Dre, bad news. Westbrook scored.
Shut up.
I can't say great news. Bottas has done X, can I? Because we're not watching a race.
Yeah, I have to do something. Shut up. at least I've got a nice story for the description of this podcast. Like, yeah, we watched this during the Manchester United game. We could just do the Manchester United game, and it's like we'll get Dre's live reactions as United melt down at West Bromwich Albion. So, like, watching this team is causing me emotional stress. but yeah.
My entire sporting life has become emotional stress.
This is true. Like, I'm going to die age 40 at this rate.
It's like, oh, I watched the New York Jets, Manchester United, the New York Yankees, and the University of Pittsburgh football team. So this has been a horrible year for me.
God, that sounds painful.
Rest in peace.
That sounds ultra painful. But right now McLaren are clearly in flux, and you know, they looked like, ooh, and a bit of an eyebrow raiser when they got rid of Perez at the end of last season for, I'm still not quite sure what they fired him for, but you know, they are basically I think McLaren kind of cracked themselves over Kevin Magnussen. Like, well, Magnussen may leave us. What do we do? Give him the seat. Give him the seat, quick! That logic is now called doing a Max Verstappen. I'm sure we'll get to that in a future episode, because I actually want to talk about this brilliant blog post that me and King read about this earlier. We might mention that at the end. But yeah, like, it was either put Magnussen in the seat immediately or lose him to Red Bull. And that's the last thing they wanted to do. Because Toro Rosso were sniffing around Magnussen around that time last year. So they gave him a seat. It turns out it was probably the right call, because Magnussen's already outpointed Perez's haul from last season.
Could have outpointed it by much more if it wasn't for those overreactionary penalties, I think. They're a bit overreactionary. In Monza and... Oh, so definitely in Spa. I think it was in Monza as well.
Spa's was justified. I think Monza was a bit harsh.
Well, it's like Alonso plows into what? I think he plowed into Vettel. He lost like half his wing and he gets nothing. But Magnussen just a little bit of shoving and get up the points, just go 20 seconds. But that's just how things go. Exactly. But McLaren liked it, so...
Yeah, I like that as well, because it shows he was willing to have a go and get stuck in, which is something that's always nice to see. If he was British, we'd be talking about that all day, because I remember when Paul de Resta debuted for Force India three years ago, and it was like, he broke his front wing in the very first Grand Prix he was in a string, and it was like, ah! And David Coulthard was like, ah! Props to the young lad, he's willing to get stuck in and have a go. Even though he broke his front wing, which I thought was hilarious.
I think the reaction to the Magnussen penalties from McLaren kind of show that, yeah, Magnussen's definitely a long-term project. And if Alonso's coming in, say goodbye to Button. I think that's the case, because...
I'm still not so sure on this.
Well,
Even though Button has reneged on his earlier Formula One will be the end of my racing days to the statement of like, oh, I'll go to the World Endurance Championship.
The fact that he's saying that, the fact that he's felt beneath to say, oh, I'll probably go to endurance racing. The fact that he's having to say that, to me, confirms that he's going. He's going. He's gone. It's game over. It's like, he wouldn't be saying this if his seat was secured, completely secured, because as I said, Magnussen is a long-term project. I can't see McLaren like leaving Magnussen out for a year or two, because that wouldn't help his, you know, building his skill up. There's no other place he can go on the driver market.
Yeah, this is the problem. This is the problem, is that basically Fernando Alonso is coming in, and both of your drivers have got more than enough right to keep their seat. Someone is getting shafted here.
Yes.
It's either you end the Kevin Magnussen experiment early, thinking he's not going to be good enough, when that clearly isn't the case, or do you get rid of Jensen after all these years and, you know, say, thanks for your service, here's your P45, go enjoy Porsche. either way, it's not an easy call, because, like, Jensen has had a very quiet but very good season for McLaren this year. He's balling right now for McLaren right now, and there's not much more Button could do with that McLaren if he tried, quite frankly.
True.
The thing is as well is that on top of that, Madison's actually been pretty good this season, all for all intents and purposes, despite the shaky penalties. Besides that, I think he's looked pretty solid. He's got good raw pace. He's out-qualified Button over the course of the season, so he's clearly got something going on for him, which is you know, which is great and all, but that's the problem now. It's like, do you let him go now, you know? And I'm not entirely sure there's a right call here, you know?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, what do you give up on a driver who has a lot of experience? So you would have, so either you would have two drivers with a lot of experience, or you have one driver with a lot of experience, with a long-term project, slowly gaining it, leeching off that experience of the older driver, of the world champion, building up his skill in the process. I don't see McLaren getting rid of Magnussen at all.
There's really no point of having two drivers over the age of 34.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta think, it's age. Age is the key factor here. And Alonso has that extra factor. He has the extra spice. And that's why he will be replaced. That's why he will replace Button.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with that. I mean, me and my brother got into an enormous scrap over this one a couple of days ago, debating this one. And I said, Button doesn't deserve to be cut. But You've invested too much into Magnussen at this point to let him go now. Like, because at the end of the day, you sacked Perez for this kid. Perez is a good driver in his own right. And definitely, you've clearly invested a ton of stock into Magnussen over the last few years. And hell, you still got Stoffel Van Dorn waiting in the wings background there as well at McLaren.
He'll probably replace Alonso whenever he retires, because I think Alonso will finish his career at McLaren.
So, yeah, I think Fernando, this is basically a last roll of the dice for him to get his third world title, because he so desperately wants that third championship.
I'm trying not to be cynical, but I don't think it's going to happen. I just don't think McLaren are going to recover quickly enough, if they recover at all.
Like, Honda's going to have some ridiculous engines to be better than what Mercedes have currently got under their bonnet right now. You know,
they have had a whole year of freely developing and observing and getting as much insight, as much, you know, you could say, like, you know, mini spying, you could say, like, just listening to what's making Mercedes this good, and all the reports, all this information. They've had all of this to make a great engine.
But the problem with that is that the best are getting better. King, talk about your Merck story real quick.
Well, yeah, hopefully Mercedes are planning to use a new fuel injector for next season, which will increase the pressure in the cylinder and hopefully increase horsepower by increasing the engine's output by 40 horsepower, which some people have said that's a bit generous, but that'd be a lot.
Another 40 horsepower, which would take the car at Merck's up to about 850 just on the engine.
Yeah.
Which, quite frankly, is ridiculous. We're going to be getting close to 1,000 horsepower in these cars if this keeps up.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's not even the engine which is the issue at McLaren. It's the chassis, because of being at McLaren, have the best engine. They have Mercedes engines, and they're fighting with Force India. You could dare say that McLaren has the same level of chassis and aero as Force India. And that's kind of embarrassing.
And Force India are a team that haven't got money to develop over a season like McLaren does. They haven't got anywhere near the same level of resources at their disposal.
Yeah. No, if Honda brings something great to the car, to the team, McLaren itself has to step up. They can't just rely on Honda for this.
But isn't McLaren getting Red Bull's former head of aerodynamics, Peter Prodromo, for next season?
Thing is, you had Adrian Newey at Red Bull since, when was it?
2006, well, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah. See, it took 2-3 years for that to work.
But, you know, Prodromo still has all the experience gained at Red Bull.
True, good point. I cannot see McLaren recovering straight away. I can't. I mean, it physically hurts me to think that McLaren could just suddenly go from midfield to utter top. I mean,
it's
for Mercedes, but 2013 for Mercedes was that intermittent year. It took him a year to go from midfield to pure domination.
But the thing is with Mercedes were building a dream team, like, right from the get-go. They were putting together parts of dudes who had been a part of championship-winning teams before, like Paddy Lowe, guys who had been on Renault and Ferrari's winning teams from the early 2000s and mid-2000s. They were putting together this dream team. The only snag in the plan was they lost Ross Brawn a year early. I believe this was, like, as Doctor Who would say, this was basically the Cartmell master plan of Mercedes, was to essentially put this all together before 2014, and it's worked out beautifully for them this season.
Nearly. You do have that driver attention, that very edginess.
Hamilton was never initially part of the plan. They didn't think Hamilton was going to leave McLaren. That's why their original driver pairing was Schumacher with Rosberg, because they knew Schumacher was going to retire eventually and Rosberg would be the number one to lead the team.
Exactly. But yeah, getting Hamilton was just a bonus, really. You know, quite a nice bonus to have, quite frankly, but you know, a bonus nonetheless.
It definitely shafted Rosberg, because you know he probably had all this. He probably under, you know, in his head from 2010. He thought that when Schumacher retired, he would be the undisputed number one, because you know he would be, like, you could say, the successor. But bringing Hamilton in, you know, even though they're great friends, he must have been a bit pissed inside, just a bit. Because he knew that Hamilton would definitely throw a spanner in the works, and he has. And they're both great drivers, but it seems like Hamilton has a slight edge, ever so slight edge.
Exactly. And, you know, it's a shame for Nico, because Nico's had a very, very good season in his own right. And a lot of
he started at Williams. I mean, I like him for that, because he started at Williams, and I love Williams. You know me. But it's like, Hamilton starts at the top straight away. Rosberg works his way from a midfield team all the way up to Mercedes. And he has this massive hurdle. But, of course, you know, it would be best to win a championship with this hurdle, because, you know, it validates your championship a bit in the eyes of the fans. Of course, championships don't need validation, but in the eyes of the fans, it would make him, he's taken on a very good teammate, or he's taken on a very good driver in another team. Good on him. He's a good champion. But
Like, yeah.
The only exception to the rule is Vettel, because even though Vettel beat Alonso, like, what, twice, it's like, oh no, he's we got
it's
going to
be his
car.
Teammate. His car was so much better.
Mm. Yeah, like, imagine if Hamilton stayed at McLaren and Mercedes had signed on Hulkenberg.
Oh, my lord.
That's a team. That's a friggin' team, that is. Man.
Oh, that's orgasmic.
Oh. Oh.
Woman, let me change my pants.
I'm having a crisis.
It's even better than gay anime girls, really.
Oh,
honestly.
God. Speaking of which, Nico Hülkenberg confirmed for next year at Force India today.
Poor guy.
Poor guy.
it's like thinking, ah, shit. It's like,
I can imagine him signing the contract. And he's just like, he's smiling, but deep inside he's crying.
He had to stop himself at the end from saying, I hate Vettel so much.
Fuck you, Sebastian. That was meant to be my seat.
It's like, he first gets trumped by Raikkonen, and then he gets trumped by Vettel. Can he get worse? Oh, dear.
The only blessing, and this is obviously for terrible reasons, is that because Jules Bianchi is probably showing no signs of coming back, if ever, unfortunately, obviously in the worst possible sense, it's kind of made Hülkenberg the prime candidate for that seat when Raikkonen decides to retire. But
I definitely think that Bianchi would have been the one to replace Raikkonen because, A, he's young. Well, that is the key. Apart from the talent, he was younger, so there'll be more time to invest. But with the unfortunate incident with Bianchi and the increasingly unlikelihood of him returning to F1 at all, I mean, it might be a similar situation to Kubica. If Bianchi recovers, I hope he does. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no reason for him not to, but at the same time, you know, well, whatever. Hülkenberg will probably get the seat unless his luck continues. You know, unless he has Gino levels of luck, he should get that seat in 2016.
On his birthday, Kimi has said that he wants to stay for 2016 now.
Oh God!
If he's crap in 2015 again, he's gone. He's gone. I can't, because the new boss, you've said it himself, he's brutal. He will shut down an entire team.
Yeah.
If it were, you know, but,
he's gonna put Raikkonen in one of those giant blenders like you get from an Itchy and Scratchy cartoon. If Raikkonen fails again next year, but Hülkenberg is clearly a top 6 to 8 guy in the field right now. He has done everything with mid-card level cars and has shown his talent time and time again. I mentioned this on Twitter before, but like I said, he is that guy. He's the 8 out of 10 guy on your favourite soap opera who you really like. He's a really nice guy. He's decently attractive. He's liked by everybody, but the girl of his dreams always goes off with some other fucker in a leather suit or some shit. Like, if the friend zone existed in Formula One, Nico Hülkenberg would be the walking example of it.
Yeah.
And that is tragic. It's like Scott Pilgrim all over again. It's like, you go to all this trouble to try and get this one girl when the other girl knives you meet in the film is actually way better.
Yeah.
It's so irritating. Yet that's just how it is a lot of the time in Formula One. It's just kind of brutal sometimes. Yeah. But you know, that's the sport for you. I mean, obviously I hope that, you know, Hülkenberg finally gets the justice he deserves. But at 27, he's running out of time, quite frankly.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird how, like, he's running out of time at 27.
Yeah, like, we all know Formula One is now becoming a young man's game, which is actually a beautiful segue to my next topic.
One thing I was a bit shocked about was like, oh, like, John Eric Vern's Formula One career is over, and he's like, John Eric Vern's 24. It's like, he looks older, but John Eric Vern's only 24.
He's 3 years below the average age of the paddock in Formula One this year. Because he
and he's being shafted. It's it's borderline disgusting how bad it is, but it's annoying thinking about it. It's really annoying.
Another one I mentioned on Twitter as well, how during their time together at Toro Rosso, Daniel Ricciardo scored 30 points, John Eric Verne scored 29. Ricciardo's probably going to be driver of the year this year, and John Eric Verne's unemployed. What kind of shit is this? Like, that is ridiculous. But this actually segues quite nicely to our little summit up to our final point of the night, really, in that... I wasn't even going to talk about this one, really, but then it was a brilliant, brilliant blog by a friend of the show, Fran Corchamps, who, again, I put it on Twitter, I might put it on my own Facebook page later on, I'll definitely put a link to it in the description on this episode. It was a brilliant, brilliant blog comparing Formula 1 to MotoGP in terms of two young guys coming into their respective sports. One is Fabio Quartararo, who is going to debut at Moto3 next year at 15 years old, which is that in itself is fucking scary. Man was born in 1999 and he's making his Grand Prix motorcycle debut in March. Like, boo. That makes me feel...
It's like, oh, he'll be going to a senior prom in 3 years.
This makes me angry. like the dude was born in 99 and is 15 years old. He's already dominated the CEV championship in Spain. And he's probably going to the Galicia team next year in Moto3 to replace one of the two seats as both their riders, Alex Rins and Alex Marquez, both get promoted to Moto2.
Well, he's going into a top team.
It looks that way because Galicia's got two empty seats next year because Rins is going to Pons next year to replace Maverick Vinales, who's going to Suzuki because it all filters up and down in the end. So Rins is replacing Vinales, and I think that's a great fit for him because that team loves having young Spanish talent to boost up. They've already got Salom there. They had Vinales. They had Pol Espargaró there for a couple of years before. They had Tito Rabat, who's on the brink of being Moto2 champion this year. That team loves having young Spaniards to train and raise up. That's a great fit for him. And Alex Marquez is going to Mark VDS next year to replace Mika Kallio. There's two empty seats at Galicia next year, and it's looking hyped like Fabio's going to take one of them, which is alarming. He's getting a top-level Honda package right off the bat.
So if he does produce this, he could be Moto3 world champion at like 16.
Yeah. Wow. Danny Blind! Sorry, Tutu. Sorry, had to say it. You beautiful Dutch man. not just you, Gino.
I try my best.
Yeah, cheers, Rye. Fabio Quartararo is probably going to take that top-end Honda seat right off the bat, so he's probably going to be an automatic title contender next year, which is freaking scary for a 15-year-old.
Imagine if he wins it. My God.
Well, I mean, isn't the the CEVs on Moto3 bikes?
Exactly. It's almost identical bikes. So the only difference is just a step up in competition rather than anything else. The bikes are pretty much identical.
Oh, great news, Dre.
Yeah?
Man United have scored.
That's what I said with Danny Blind, you idiots.
Yeah, you weren't paying attention.
No, I was...
me not shouting out Blind wasn't obvious enough.
I was taking him a compliment. I was taking him a compliment. Dre's compliment. Oh.
Blind man to the rescue. That's the headline for the Manchester Evening News tomorrow. But they were comparing Fabio, who is coming in at 15 next year, already being hailed as the French Marc Marquez, which is a terrifying thought. that alone is a terrifying thought. We're already getting Marc Marquez comparisons, and he's only been in the top class for 30-odd races.
he has a good two decades left of his career.
Yeah, he's got another 15 years if he wants it, Marquez. He's still only 21 years old, for fuck's sake. But they're talking about him, and they were comparing him to the hiring at Toro Rosso of Max Verstappen, who is going to be debuting in F1 next year. at 17, and I know King will vouch for me on this one. Go find that blog. It's exceptionally well written. It's one of the best blogs I've ever written since becoming a journalist when it comes to these kind of things. It is a gem. And she made fantastic comparisons to how the back sports, how the ladders of MotoGP's work, talking about Casey Stoner and the natural talent that he was, comparing him to Ayrton Senna and how Senna made the ladder work for him, even though the standard F1 that doesn't really exist. It's kind of, there's so many different branches you can take to get into Formula 1 these days, but, you know, in general, you know, how the F1 ladder is difficult, and basically her overriding point was that Max is too young, and that Formula 1 needs to do something about it, and it kind of begs the question to me of, well, how young is too young, you know?
I think it's different with Quintara because, like you said, the CEVs and Moto3, they use the exact same bikes. It is not nowhere close between Formula 3 and Formula 1.
No, exactly.
It's and plus it's like he's going up to the top motorbike series, is he? He's going into Moto3. I mean, he's still pretty damn young, but he's going into a much lower series. Verstappen's going straight into the top.
And a field in Moto3 which is constantly getting younger as well, because remember, in Moto3 there's an age cap. You're not allowed to be in that series if you're over the age of 27. Wow. So the two of the top contenders in this year's title, Alexis Masbu and Efren Vasquez, are not going to be in there next year. They're going to be unemployed. So, you know, like it's either for those two, it's either get promoted or leave, essentially. So, and I don't think that's going to happen because I don't think Masbu's ever been good enough, and I don't think Vasquez has ever been good enough. So they're probably going to be out of a job next year. So that's going to be quite a scary thought. And like I said, that field is getting younger. I mean, Fran mentioned this in their blog as well, talking about how Jack Miller. I think they're desperate for Jack Miller to be the new Casey Stoner, essentially. Hence the double promotion to MotoGP right off the bat, and he's only 20 himself, and you know, and he's going to be, I think he's going to be the second youngest guy in the whole field next season behind Maverick Viñales, who is still only 19, who is probably the best rider in the class right now, which is friggin' alarming. But
it's this gaming generation, man. This gaming generation. So young.
Exactly. Like, I'm 22 and I'm thinking, what the fuck have I done with my life? when there's going to be a guy debuting in F1 who's 5 years younger than me next year. But is Max Verstappen ready for Formula 1? Should he be given an F1 seat at 17?
Well, Magnussen made the jump from Formula Renault, didn't he? If I remember correctly, he made the jump from Formula Renault to F1, but of course he was older.
And you know, Formula Renault 3.5, it's comparable to GP2, so it's not a big jump. It's kind of standard.
True.
Exactly. Just look at Carlos Sainz Jr., who won the Formula Renault 3.5 series yesterday. He's heavily hinted to be Verstappen's teammate next year now.
So like,
hopefully he does deserve it.
Verstappen has the potential, but he's not ready, and it's not his fault, it's the fault of the system.
Yeah.
I think this is a very intense version of the skill building that Magnussen is going through. I think this is a super long-term project. Super long-term project.
What, like 5-6 years we're talking here?
I think Toro Rosso are going to take Verstappen's career very differently than they've done with Buemi or Aljaswari or Vern.
Just so you know, Vern right now, 24. Buemi right now, 20. No, Aljaswari's 24. Buemi's 25.
Yeah,
well, the thing is, he's 17.
Aljaswari's 24 as well. Because Aljaswari debuted as a 19-year-old.
Well, that's 2 extra years to learn. If he's good straight away, if he's doing the same amount of, you know, earning the same amount of points than Kvyat has done at an earlier age.
Gino, there's a serious problem with this. You can't give a guy 5 years and then at the same time run a driver academy. Basically, Verstappen's going to be the logjam. Look, until this year, Sebastian Vettel was the oldest guy in their department and he was 27. Like,
Jesus.
And you know what? There's not, unless something dramatic happens, there's not going to be a replacement at Red Bull for some time. They have, their two drivers are 25 and 21. That's the thing that we're talking about with Kvyat. Kvyat has gone from GP3 to Red Bull Racing in 18 months.
Wait a minute, could you argue that this is, I think Verstappen screwed himself then. Verstappen screwed himself up. He should have taken up the offers from Mercedes and McLaren, was it? I think he screwed himself up.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, where else are you going to go? You have to pay to be everywhere else.
Exactly. And this is the problem. Toro Rosso offered Verstappen the one thing that Mercedes couldn't offer, and that was a race seat straight off the bat. And it's like they were going to get rid of Verne, whatever happened. So they had a race seat they could have given him right away, and no 17-year-old is going to turn down an F1 seat. It's a bit like having Jennifer Lawrence with wide-open legs on your bed covered in honey. No respected red-blooded male at 17 is going to say no.
Yeah, and it's like there's no point going to GP2, because if you go there and stay too long, no one's going to take you seriously even if you're successful.
Exactly, and this is the problem. Like, the Red Bull driver, Red Bull Junior team, is a conveyor belt of talent. They have Alex Lynn right there, who's probably going to be GP3 champion this year as well, and he's going to be stuck there. And what's he going to do? Go to GP2 next year and be mediocre for 4 years and then maybe get an F1 seat?
And no one's going to be like, oh, you're extremely mediocre, but you're even worse because you had the experience which other people didn't have in GP2.
See Palmer, Joylan for that one. Like, that's his problem now, because he's been in GP2 for, like, 3 years, and only now he's won the championships. Like, well, how good are you really if it took you 3 years? Like, was it 4 years with Palmer? I think it was 4, actually.
The thing is, he can't prove himself to be very consistent with it because of the GP2 restrictions if you win the championship. He can't stay.
Because this is the problem. The GP2 system only works if there's a guaranteed seat in Formula 1 waiting for you, which is far from the freaking case these days.
It's Formula 1 doesn't have a ladder. It has a conveyor belt. It's starting to show cracks. Like, next year, there's not going to be a British Formula 3.
Yeah. Then that's a sad thing as well. Less feeder series is not going to help the situation one bit. It's definitely a situation which I think needs to be addressed, because guys like Pastor Maldonado, yeah, he was a GP2 world champion, but it also took him 4 years to win said title. So how good was he really? And then he debuts as a 26-year-old. It's like, well, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's like just to do a quick rundown, like everyone. Everyone's trying to force their way up, so you have GP2 being a place for pay drivers, you have GP3, people claim that their cars are just completely irrelevant to everything else. Mm-hmm. Formula 3, it's basically only the European Championship, Germany's still barely holding on with their national series, Spain has like a really cheap like second tier European Championship now, Italy doesn't exist anymore, and the British series won't exist next year either.
Sounds promising. The thing is, if you, like, say we take Fran's points on at face value, like, and say, yeah, Verstappen's too young at 17, like, where do you draw the line here? Because, like, having an age limit draws up its own set of problems. Because,
well, I don't know, like, NASCAR has their age limit of 18, and it's just good enough.
The thing is, the younger the drivers get, the more it kind of hurts the sport, in a sense that, oh, the cars are too easy to drive. That's the case.
Actually, you really can't make that argument if it's they're too young because the cars are too easy to drive. Then next thing you know, like, drivers' careers would also be longer, too. Like, people don't last in their 40s in the Formula 1.
That's the thing. That's the thing. Like, Max Verstappen isn't that much younger than drivers that have debuted before. Like I said, Hami Alguersuari holds the record for youngest driver in Formula 1 at 19. Sebastian Vettel had the record at 19 and a bit when he was the first guy to take part in a race weekend, I think, at 19 years old.
Quickest to get a penalty as well.
Yeah. 6 seconds. What a guy.
Four-time world champion in the end.
My last girlfriend lasted that long.
I mean, then you get issues where it's like people wait, but there's just no seats available, and they have to look to other places like Vettel's teammate at Toro Rosso, Sebastian Bourdais. He won Formula 3000, which is the modern equivalent to GP2. Couldn't get a seat and had to come to America.
There has to be some sort of proper intermittent series or some sort of sister series. Well, then that opens up a new area of problems. Like, oh, will they ever... Does a sister series have the same weight as the main series? Will they ever get out of a sister series?
We have this with GP2 right now.
Yeah, because you know what? Stoffel Van Dorn's going to have this problem in a couple of years' time. I guarantee you, because McLaren are probably not going to change their lineup anytime soon now.
Right now, the Formula 1 teams are way too focused on their own issues to even care about GP2, if it's broken or not.
Yeah, it's like, screw it, half the teams are in heavy amounts of debt. They don't give a shoot, they're employing as drivers these days. Like,
yeah.
Who's got the biggest paycheck? Like, it's going to be a bidding war for that second Caterham seat next year.
It's like pay to be in GB2 or pay to be in Formula 1. I'd rather pay to be in Formula 1.
Oh, but at least if you pay for to be in GB2, at least you have like some sort of decent shot of having some fun. I mean, if I drove a Caterham, I would be dying inside.
Hey, but you're more likely to make money because people are more likely to sponsor a Formula 1 driver than a GP2 driver.
That's right.
But it's like, look at Bianchi. He was in Marussia for, like, you know, a decent amount of time. And he's been driving the socks off at Marussia. He's been just doing great. And the only attention he's got is Ferrari. And that kind of attention was, oh, he'll eventually replace. He will probably replace, X, like, you know, Raikkonen or Alonso, depending on the day. But... Even if you've got talent in the lower teams, you have to wait for ages, and you have to hope that nobody with a bigger paycheck replaces you. It's a very dire situation. Very dire.
Yeah, because
the system is broken. The system is fundamentally broken.
There's no place for drivers to actually showcase their skills anymore.
Because if you do that in GP2, you looked at it being too old now because of the experience you've got now. There's just no fault of the driver. It's like, well, there's no seat in F1. What can I do? And if you win the title, you're removed from the series. So,
yeah, it's like either showcase your skills when you're young or you're just never going to make it.
Exactly, and that's the problem with F1. God, this has been a really depressing episode, hasn't it?
Yeah. First episode.
How a Formula 3 champion from Germany was like, completely forget the ladder, I'm going to do it my own way, and made it, and became Formula 1's most successful driver ever.
Hey.
Like, Michael Schumacher, after he won German Formula 3, he didn't go to Formula 3000 like everyone else, he went to the World Sports Car Championship.
You tell him, Michael. Get well soon, brother. But, yeah. We promise that future episodes will definitely be more cheery than this one. Maybe. We hope. Being a Formula One fan means you're often going to end up being depressed anyway over a lot of shit. So,
I can try and bring in some more gay anime girls just to like cheer
things up. Oh, Jesus. But, yeah, we went a little bit over, but actually, that's not too bad. About an hour 45 is actually pretty good. But, I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Feel free to subscribe on iTunes. King, plug yourself real quick.
Yeah, you can visit my blog/video channel at theformulae.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Ryan Eric King.
Gino?
You can subscribe to me on YouTube. Not making anything at the minute, but of course I have my review of F1 2014, which I hope to get released on Friday if I'm not too lazy. And of course you can follow my Twitter, where you can get a daily dose of gay anime girls and all that stuff.
Yeah, but you can follow him at Krekan, at CREKKAN. Do so at your own peril. But he's actually a really nice guy, so.
Oh, thank you.
I'm sure he'll be all right. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Harrison101HD, and you can also obviously check it out on the website, Harrison101.com, my YouTube, youtube.com/Harrison101HD, and Facebook / you get the idea. Just search for it, you'll be fine. But until next time, I've been Harrison, he's been King and Kraken, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Bye.